Well, Jesus gave the parable, it's an analogy, a metaphor, about those who listened to his teachings and built their house on the foundation of his teachings. He talked about the wise man built his house on his teachings, and that was like building a house on rock. The other man built his house on sand because he was foolish and didn't build his house on Jesus' teachings. But in both cases, both of these are metaphors for people's lives. On both of these lives, whether the saint or the sinner, the rain descended, Jesus said. The floods came, Jesus said. And the wind blew and beat against that house. The only difference was that the house built on the rock did not completely collapse. It didn't destroy his life. It didn't destroy his future. It didn't destroy what God has in store with him. Whereas the person who built on the sand, the house went down. So God does not spare his people from some sufferings that happen in the world. And yet, even in the middle of these sufferings, we can rejoice. Think about it. What if every Christian, you know, a storm came and the Christian person, the person who believed in God, you, let's say, you're a saint, you're a person who loves God. Everybody around you, their houses were destroyed, but you're standing pristine good. Sickness happens and everybody around you is sick, but you never get it. And every time something happens, every one of us, we escape all the problems of life. We never have a sickness. We never have a problem. We never have a flat tire. We never have. The people finally say, well, you know, how come your house never has any troubles in an earthquake? How come you don't have it? And you say, well, it's because I believe in God, because I trust in the true religion, because I go to this church, because I keep the Sabbath. I do this. I do that. I don't do this. I don't do that. I do the other thing. And they say, wow. What if I could do just like you do? And all of a sudden people will start coming into the church so that they can, what? Escape the problems of life only. And what would happen? What would happen to righteousness? What would happen to truth? You'd have people coming into the church as a kind of insurance policy against problems that happen in life. One of the things that suffering does is that it stirs up the conscience of other people. You know, if the sight of someone suffering has an effect upon us that we start to look for solutions, you know how many people have died over the years? They ate a poison thing, a poison gourd. What do we learn from it? What do we learn when somebody has gotten sick? We learn a lesson that goes to future, saving future generations. Suffering often creates in the human conscience an awakening to crusade. There are people who lost a son or a daughter to a particular disease, who made it their lifelong goal to find a solution to that problem. They will donate, they will raise funds for it, they will try to march and try to get things done against that disease. As Franklin Roosevelt did when the March of Dimes, you know, he was a polio victim himself, and we had the March of Dimes that came along when the dime had his name on, picture on it. March of Dimes to wipe out polio. So one of the things that happens when people bungle, when there are troubles, is that people can be moved to take action. Now you're going to say, well, why doesn't God just take it? Why doesn't God just wipe it out? Why do people have it? Why doesn't God do it? You know, this is a long-established statement. God does work through human agencies. God does work through human beings. Why doesn't God just preach the gospel? Why did he ask us to do it? Why doesn't God just shout to the whole world and convert them? Why does he want the church to do it? Because God works through human agencies, human beings. You remember the old joke, you remember the guy that was stranded in a flood, and the flood was coming, he was praying to God to save him, you know, and a guy in the motorboat came up because he was only up on this porch and said, hey, get in, we'll take you to safety. No, he says, I'm waiting for God. And pretty soon, you know, the waters came back up and another guy came by. Would you like to get on our boat? No, I'm waiting for God. Pretty soon he's up on his rooftop because the waters came so high, and the helicopter came by and they dropped a ladder. The helicopter said, would you like to get on? We can save you. He said, no, I'm waiting for God. He'll save me. Finally, the waters swept over and swept him in, and, you know, he died. And as the story goes, when he went to heaven, he says, you know, God, I was praying to you to save me from this. And God said, well, I sent you a boat, I sent you a motorcycle, I sent you other things, I sent you a helicopter, and you wouldn't do it. See, God does work so much of the time through human agencies. We cannot forget that. And God can work through you. God can work through you. Your phone call, your card, your letter, your encouragement, your love, your care. If suffering brings that out, right? So, we can say that those who never feel pain or grief or trouble can what? If you never felt it, you're not a person that can get mercy or show mercy. The sufferers of today are often bearing the burdens for the unborn tomorrow, because we look for solutions, don't we? We try. Mankind has worked and worked and worked. People are working right now because somebody is hurting. Somebody is suffering. Children may be abandoned. Children are abused. So we passed laws to stop child abuse. We passed laws against molestation. We passed laws. Well, because why? You know that one time there were no laws in America against child abuse? You could do anything to your child. It was not against the law at all. So we've had a lot of laws done because of suffering. You know, in the book of Psalms, chapter 90, verses 16 and 17, we read this. Let your work appear to your servants, and your majesty to their children. Let the favor of the Lord our God be upon us, and confirm for us the work of our hands. Yes, confirm the work of our hands. Yes. Yes, the grim fact of sickness and disease leads people to go ahead and work against it. Jesus fought the scourge of disease. He went around healing people. And so do many people. You know, you could say, well, we've fought against it. Well, you know, we've wiped out a lot of diseases. You know, the bubonic plague killed, you know, almost three-quarters or two-thirds of the people in Europe. And we have established a center of disease control. We're on top of it. We don't want it spread around. We're careful. I'm not always saying that the medical profession has gone the right way, but they have accomplished a lot, and we've wiped out polio. We've wiped out a lot of diseases, inoculations and other things like that. People have been moved because of suffering to do something positive. Something often brings out the best in people. You know, Jesus learned, didn't he? Though he were a son, Hebrews 5:8 said. I've quoted that before, but I'll quote it again. Though he were a son, yet learned he obedience by the things he... What? By the pleasures he had, by the parties he attended, by the things he suffered. You know, there's a story about a woman who had all kinds of troubles, and she said, I'd wish I had never been made. To which a close friend replied, my dear, you're not made yet. You're being made And this is the Maker's process. We're being made. So this is what happens. The fact that is that suffering often brings character, brings about the character that we so often need. Suffering is a gift that brings character. As you can bear the suffering, you develop self-control and faith and trust. It increases your faith. That's why James said, count it all joy when you fall into different trials and problems. It takes a world of trouble to make possible the finest qualities of life. Think about it. If there were no risk or danger in life, think about it. If there was no risk, there were no dangers, there was no problems, where would you find courage? You wouldn't have to have any courage if there were no danger. If you had no danger and no risk, where would chivalry be? You know, somebody that steps up and does something. If there were no suffering at all, think about this. Where would you find compassion? You remember the story of the Good Samaritan? He was going down from I've gone down that road, you know, from Jerusalem all the way down to Jericho, down at the bottom there. It's a huge drop in elevation. You go down. And on that road was a windy road. It was easy to get knocked off. And so a Jewish guy was going down. He was flowing, and he gets knocked off and beat up and robbed, and they leave him there. A Levite went by. A priest went by. And finally the Samaritan came. He saw him, and the Bible says he had compassion on him. Got off his donkey, poured wine and oil into him and took him and tried to help him. He had compassion. If people never suffer, now you're going to say, well, what about the millennium, David? There's not going to be suffering there. Well, yes, but when you're in the millennium, when you are in the millennium, you've already been through your suffering. You've already developed your character. But the people of the millennium don't forget that when things are all great, all wonderful. What happens at the end of the millennium? Do you remember that little story in the book of Revelation 21? The devil is let loose, and what does he do? He right out and deceives these people, and they just follow it like that. With no struggle. With no struggle, how do people develop character? How do they develop strength? If there were no discipline and hardship, where would we learn patient endurance? Where would we have this? If we had no trouble in the whole universe, where would we learn some of these finest qualities of mercy, of compassion, of love, of care, of giving? Where would you find that if there were no problems in the world? If there were no temptations in the world, where would we develop righteousness and good character and strength? Where would we do that? And don't forget, you know, we have to overcome. It's moral victory against these temptations that we're looking for. If life is a warfare, there's no discharge from this life. You don't get out of it without serving the full time. Christianity can't be a Christianity without some tears. Without some suffering. Now, the fact that we can turn our suffering, that we can have joy even in our suffering, because there are sufferings. There are sufferings. We can have joy with them. There is a real instinct in our character, in our world. It takes a world of trouble to train men for the high calling of God as the sons of God, the character of Jesus Christ. The Apostle Paul talked about some sufferings that he did. I want to read a passage from 2 Corinthians chapter 6, beginning in verse 1. And working together with him, he says, We also urge you not to receive the grace of God in vain. This is 2 Corinthians 6, verse 1. For he says, at the acceptable time I have listened to you, on the day of salvation I have helped you. Behold, now is an acceptable time. Behold, now is a day of salvation. And then he says this in verse 3. Listen to his phrase. Giving no cause for offense in anything, so that the ministry will not be discredited. But in everything, commending ourselves as the servants of God. Commending. That Greek word means this: to provide evidence of a personal characteristic or a claim through action, to demonstrate, to show, to bring out that we commending ourselves, to provide the evidence that we are the servants of God. Listen to what he says. How does he do it? In much endurance. Well, why do you have to have endurance if there's no struggle? In afflictions, in hardships, in distresses. Paul, this is Paul going through. This is God's servant, Paul, an apostle in the first century. In beatings, in imprisonments, in tumults, in labors, in sleeplessness, in hunger, yet in purity, in knowledge, in patience, in kindness, in the Holy Spirit, in genuine love, in the word of truth, in the power of God. So he has proven himself, proving these, we have commending ourselves as the servants of God in all these things. But part of those are the struggles that we have. By the weapons of righteousness on the right hand and on the left, by glory and dishonor, by evil report and good report, regarded as deceivers and yet true, as unknown yet well known, as dying yet behold we live, as punished yet not put to death, as sorrowful, yet always rejoicing. Isn't that? As sorrowful, as you have sorrow in life sometimes, but yet always rejoicing. Rejoicing even what? In distresses? Do you think the Apostle Paul rejoiced when he was beaten? You think he rejoiced when he was put in prison? I think he did. Well, this is my chance to prove I'm a servant of God. I'm faithful to God. He rejoiced in it. As poor, yet making many rich, as having nothing, yet possessing everything. That's the Apostle Paul's account of his ministry. Yes. Tears. We have, when tears come, there's somebody who can walk down and comfort. Now think about a little child. Those of you who are parents, you have a little child, he falls, he gets hurt. He puts his finger on something, gets burned, and or she, little girl, you pick her up and you hold her in your arms. And you know very well this is just the beginning of life, sometimes difficulties. This is not the end. This is not, I mean, you'd like to save them from everything, but this is not the end. This is just life beginning the way life is. There are trips, there are falls. Almost every one of you, probably if on some place in your body, you have a scar. From a scar that was cut, you cut yourself. I have one on my finger here. I have a couple on my wrists from boils that I had when I was a kid. I have some scars on my body. And you probably have scars on your body somewhere. You cut yourself, you cut your knee, you fell down, you hurt yourself. You didn't stop. That's part of life. And a wise father says, well, I could just take my little children and comfort them. God comforts us as a father, is merciful, has pity on his children, so the eternal pities those that fear him. But he doesn't save you from every struggle. He doesn't stop every struggle. There was once a professor of music in Vienna Austria, and he was listening to a pupil singing. She had a magnificent voice, and he said, she is a magnificent singer, and yet there's just something lacking in her singing. And he said this about her: life has been too kind to her. But if one day someone breaks her heart, she will be one of the finest singers in Europe. Life has been too kind. She doesn't have the pathos. She doesn't have the emotion that go with some of these songs, you know, in the operettas and all that. Life has been too kind. She hits all the notes right. As one man said when he was sick, I have known, lying racked with pain, more of God since I came to this bed than through all of my life. What does suffering do? One man, when he was going blind, said, the darkness is like the holy of holies, of which no one can rob me. In the darkness, I meet God face to face. I have a client who told me he's blind. He said, I hated it. I hated being blind. I cursed. I hated it. I wouldn't accept it. But he has now accepted it. And he's joyous. He sees things that you and I don't see, even though he doesn't see it all. When you think about the names, I mean, think of the illustrious list of great names of God's people. They're listed in the book of Hebrews, and I want to turn there to the book of Hebrews. And I want you to imagine these names, stellar names. I'm going to read from Hebrews chapter 11, beginning in verse 32. And what more shall I say? Hebrews 11, verse 32. Hebrews 11, verse 32. And what more shall I say? For time will fail me if I tell of Gideon. Who was Gideon? With his 300 men, you know, putting to the test, he went out and fought the Midians. Of Barak. Of Samson. Where did Samson end up? Dying and killing the Philistines. Of Jephthah. Of David. And Samuel, and the prophets, who by faith conquered kingdoms, performed acts of righteousness, obtained promises, shut the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire. You remember Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? You remember Daniel within the lion's den? Escaped the edge of the sword, from weakness were made strong, became mighty in war. That's the struggles these people had. These are the people, these are the stellars, these are the people whose names are in lights in the stars. Put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection. Others were tortured. Listen to this phrase. Others were tortured, not accepting their release, so that they may obtain a better resurrection. And others, verse 38, experienced mockings, scourgings, yes, also chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, verse 37. They were sawn in two. They were tempted. They were put to death with the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated. Oh, yeah. Are these the guys? Think about it. Oh, and I tell you what. Here's the list of great guys. They had a vacation over here in Tahiti. This person had a wonderful time, and they had wonderful leisures. And they just had a great time. They never suffered. They never had any problems. These are God's great men of faith. Now, we all like leisure. We all like a little pleasure. We all like freedom from pain. I hate pain. I hate suffering. But we do suffer. We have pain. People have pain. But these people overcame afflictions, and they were God's righteous people. Yes. Being destitute, afflicted, ill-treated. Verse 38, men of whom, or people of whom, the world was not worthy. Wandering in deserts and mountains and caves and holes in the ground. Now listen to what he says in verse 38. All these, having gained approval through faith. They didn't lose their faith when they were going through this. They didn't lose their trust when they were going through this. Did not receive what was promised, because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. It would be wonderful if we never had any pain. It would be wonderful if the whole world never experienced it. But the world does, and sometimes it brings out good qualities. So suffering has a purpose in life. Listen to this little poem. It goes like this. I walked a mile with pleasure. She chatted all the way, but left me none the wiser for all she had to say. I walked a mile with sorrow, and ne'er a word said she, but oh, the things I learned from her when sorrow walked with me. We do learn from the things. Though he were a son, yet learned he from the things he learned obedience from the things he suffered. Pain can be creative. You don't just have to bear it negatively. You can turn it to be positive. Do you know how many people, like Helen Keller, who couldn't speak, who couldn't see? I mean, she didn't hear and she couldn't see, and she was deaf and blind, and yet she stood in front of people giving lectures and talks. A deaf, blind woman who overcame. Who overcame. What are we supposed to do? You can take what appears to be something ugly, an implement of destruction, and you can transform it into one of the most wonderful weapons for good faith in God as an inspiration. Think about the people who suffered and overcame. Think about a person with no legs who is running in a marathon. Think of a person with no feet to run in a marathon. Think of people who have had blindness who have overcome it and done things that inspired thousands and millions of other people. We can realize what the Apostle Paul said. You know, Paul had a thorn in the flesh. He called it a messenger of Satan to buffet me. He said, I asked the Lord three times to take it away. And the Lord said, my grace is sufficient for you. I'm not going to take it away. We recognize this beautiful passage in the book of Romans. Because no matter what happens to us, we know that no matter what the suffering is, as these women who recently died with cancer, no. Romans 8. Who will separate us from the love of Christ? Listen to what he's asking. What will separate us from? Will tribulation or distress, or persecution or famine, or nakedness or peril or sword? Will any of those separate us from the love of Christ? But God can let those things happen to us. He can let it happen to us. Just as it is written, for your sake we are being put to death all day long. We were considered as sheep for the slaughter. I mean, this is Paul writing this. But in all these things we overwhelmingly conquer. Now, brethren, here's the whole point of salvation. What does it say in the book of Revelation to these churches? To him that what? Overcometh. Now that Greek word is the word here, means conquer. It means you're a winner. You conquer. You're not going to go down with this. You are, you know, would you say Davy Crockett when he got killed at the Alamo? Would you say that he went down easy? He was killed, but you say, was he a coward? Was he a person that just turned and ran? Or did he fight right to the very last second? Was he a conqueror? Yes, he was a conqueror. In all these things, we overwhelmingly conquer through him who loved us, even though we face them. For your sake, we are put to death all day long. But in all these things, we overwhelmingly conquer. But I'm convinced that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor things present, nor things to come, nor powers, nor height, nor depth, or any other created thing shall be able to separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus our Lord. We don't give up. All these things happen, but we have to conquer. We stand straight. How about martyrs who were put to death for their faith? Do they conquer? Do they win? Yes, because they never gave in. Now, I know this kind of sermon is not happy sermon, you know. Happiness is that God's going to bless you in everything you do. You give your money and you will be blessed. And you come here and you do this and you will just be blessed. Nothing will happen to you. It'll be a wonderful day. Everything's going well. You'll never get any diseases. Nothing can happen bad. You're going to always be fine. Nothing, you know, you'll never be persecuted. You'll never have any troubles. All is wonderful. Yeah, well, that would be nice. And for most of the time, I think, you know, God has given us an abundant life, right? For the most part. God has given us an abundant life. Most of us have not suffered. I have not suffered like any of these people in prison and caves and, you know, dying and starvation. And all. I haven't done that. You haven't done most of that either. Thankfully, we've been living in a wonderful country that's provided protection for us in our beliefs. But there are other people who are suffering right now. They're suffering from various reasons. They're hurting. But thankfully, you know, I mean, most of the time, we're not suffering. Most of the time, it's great. But there's no guarantee. God has not made a promise that you'll never suffer. That's not true. If anybody tells you that, that's not true. Because the great men, the people whose names are in bold and blazed, you know, lights of examples for us. These are examples for us. And Jesus Christ himself is an example for us. These are the people that overcame. In the face of the suffering, they overcame it. They were strong. They were powerful in the face of suffering. And that's what it takes. To him that overcometh, will I grant to sit with me on my throne as I overcame and sit with my Father on his throne. That's what Jesus tells the churches. So we are overcomers. We can turn suffering. We can rise above it. We can do something in which we are joyous that we have been through it. You know, you ever been through a trial? And you say, wow, I went through that. And you look back, you say, well, I don't want to go through it again, but I went through it. I'm glad I went through it. And I'm stronger for it. And that's what we have to be. We have to be overcomers. We are God's overcomers. Yes, it's nice. There's nothing to overcome, you know, if life is just always pleasant. Is there anything to overcome? Not much. Hey, we enjoy life. Things are great. Everything's going well. I never have to suffer. I never see anything bad. No. We'll never have any problems. So what is there to overcome? When do you get strong? If you never face trials, if you never face issues, you'll never get strong. If you never get strong, what are you? You just stay weak. You and I have to overcome. And when we do, we get to sit with Jesus on his almighty throne.